Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for joining us tonight. A little out of breath. Excuse me. Boy, that sounds good on the electric radio, doesn't it? Sorry about that. It's just too intense, keeping abreast of what's going on. It's I think we're all going to get whiplash, right? Just some kind of zip-zam, zip-zam. I need to sit down someplace and listen to a good folk singer and just take a break, don't you? We got something new for you tonight at the NovaMRadio.com website for Founders Club members. If you go to the site, NovaMRadio.com, and log on with your username and your password, there's a chat link now on the website. And let's see what happens. I don't know if I'll be able to check in there tonight. I've got a password, too. I might be able to. But just go to NovaMRadio.com and log on with the username and password that you have at the chat link on NovaMRadio.com website. And introduce yourself to the other people in the room. Be nice. All right? All right, we have a couple of... A couple of quick things here before we get to the main topics tonight, which are, well, actually, whatever they turn out to be, right? Another suicide at Guantanamo, this time a Saudi Arabian prisoner. U.S. Southern Command in Miami said in a statement, quote, the detainee was found unresponsive and not breathing. The detainee was pronounced dead. After all, life-saving measures had been exhausted. Don't you just wonder what happened to this guy, right? Before he committed suicide, the military did not indicate how the prisoner died. He's the fourth one that we know of that has been reported out to the world at large. Fourth apparent suicide at the detention camp. Three others hanged themselves in their cells last summer. Oh, and by the way, those deaths are still under investigation by the Naval Criminal Investigative Service. The Southern Command said, and I love this, quote, the remains of the deceased detainee are being treated with the utmost respect. A cultural advisor is assisting the Joint Task Force to ensure that the remains are handled in a culturally sensitive and religiously appropriate manner, end quote. When you read something like that or hear me read it, don't you just want to scream? Here's somebody who probably, we only have to guess because you and I and the rest of the world are not privy to what goes on in our gulag, in this particular hole in our gulag. This is none of our business, you see. We left that part of America behind 6 years ago. But since all we have to go on is what little bits and pieces come sliming their way out of this hell hole that we have created in the name of freedom and democracy. But here we are with a statement. The remains of the deceased are being treated with the utmost respect. Now, according to Cheney, this evil monster, and Gonzalez, this filthy monster, we have the right, we have the privilege of doing whatever we want to breathing, living detainees. We can strip their skin off alive if we choose to. We can gouge their eyes out. New York Times today, talking about this subject, there was a dentist who volunteered his services to the torturers, and he said he can administer the type of pain that no one can resist. This is what we've become. When a dentist takes it on himself to notify the United States government that he, the dentist, can show the torturers how to administer such an exquisite pain nobody can resist. Here in Atlanta, Laura Mallory. And, oh, God, her name is one R away from mine. For the fifth time, she has been in court trying to get the Harry Potter books removed from school library shelves because they encourage witchcraft! This woman began this in 2005, her anti-Harry Potter crusade. Laura Mallory, a Christian nutball of the highest order. Now, for the fifth time, she has been turned down by court after court, appeals courts, the Gwinnett County Board of Education, just over and over. She says she's considering filing a brand new case in federal court. She said, one day, the truth about this is going to come out. The truth is, this woman is insane. Insane. Supporters of the Harry Potter books say the stories encourage children to read. Mrs. Mallory responded that that wasn't sufficient reason to allow the books to remain in school libraries. I'm sure, she said, there are teenagers who read pornography, but that doesn't make it right. The hearing yesterday provided Mrs. Mallory more time to make her case than any of the previous hearings she has attended. She argued her case herself. She had 64 minutes. She restated many of her previous complaints about the Harry Potter series. She argued the books lure children into practicing witchcraft. Oh, yeah, she acknowledged she hasn't read any of the Harry Potter books. Sometimes breaking into tears, Mrs. Mallory read testimony from a teenager who said reading the books led her to contemplate suicide. Quoting a counselor who testified at a previous one of these psycho hearings, Mrs. Mallory said the Potter movies and books led one boy into high-risk behaviors like dangerous motorcycle stunts and bungee jumping. She said through her tears, I have a dream that God will be welcomed back into our schools. Oh! A Saudi prisoner hanged himself at Guantanamo today. United States Southern Command is investigating. In Chicago, Anne Bonaszewski, 45 years old. She lives in the wealthy suburb of Wheaton, Illinois. She's a mother of five. Back in February, she had her three children in her 1996 Ford van when she was stopped after a citizen reported a possible drunk driver. Today, Mrs. Bonaszewski accepted a plea agreement with prosecutors and was sentenced by DuPage County Judge Daniel Guerin to 18 months of court supervision. She was also ordered to perform 140 hours of public service, of which 40 hours must be beneficial to children. See, she had her three kids in the van with her. She must attend counseling and treatment sessions, attend a victim impact panel, and pay $1,500 in fines and fees. As part of the agreement, prosecutors dropped four other charges, including endangering the life of a child, failing to secure a child younger than eight in the child restraint system, improper lane usage, and driving an uninsured motor vehicle. Her father, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia.
Voices in the night, she's a restless spirit.
go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
Twenty-one past the hour. Yeah, Antonin Scalia's daughter busted back in February, drunk driving with three of her kids in the car. My God, she. The judge told this poor sad woman, Ann Banaszewski, and I say poor sad, not in a patronizing way. Any 45-year-old mother of three who puts her kids in a car, doesn't belt them in, gets behind the wheel when she's drunk on her rear end, and gets busted, that's sad. Now, you know my feeling about drunk drivers. In a situation like this where I the judge, I'd let an appeals court try to overrule me, but I would say you turn in your license today, ma'am, and you never drive again. Ever. Ever. That's it. The judge told this woman that she would be allowed to drive to counseling and treatment sessions, but ordered her to abstain from all alcohol during her period of supervision, which is 18 months, and ordered that no children younger than 18 are allowed in a car she drives until she regains full driving privileges. It's astonishing. Now, I'm sorry, but I refuse to believe that someone who came out of a normal childhood, i.e. she's the son of Antonin Fat Tony Scalia, someone who comes out of a normal childhood does not get behind the wheel of a car drunk with her three kids at the age of 45. No. Another example of these good Christian family values. Because Scalia, and I emphasize sarcastically the word Christian, because Scalia flouts it. He's one of these militant Catholics. Knights of Columbus, Subdivision 6, that walk around with knives on their hips and will cut your throat if they find out you're a Protestant or a Jew. Okay, I just made that part up. Orwell in England. I don't know if you know this, us on this side of the pond, or we on this side of the pond, if we know this, our Brit listeners certainly understand this. Britain is already the most surveilled industrialized state in the Western world. It was recently estimated, they've got cameras all over the place, but it was recently estimated that the average Brit is captured by electronic eyes more than 300 times on a typical workday. Yes, that's right, not a typo, 300 times a day. If you figure the person is out in the world 10 hours doing their work and commuting, that means at least 30 times an hour they're picked up on a camera. The UK, or at least Britain's surveillance network, now boasts one camera for every 14 citizens. My God! There are 4.2 million closed-circuit cameras across the country. 4.2 million! But it's becoming Orwellian in a very definitive way, because these cameras no longer just record everything. They now talk back to you. From rawstory.com, this. In a scene eerily reminiscent of Orwell's dystopian vision of 1984, loudspeakers in one small town center in northern Britain scold anyone that the cameras catch engaged in, quote, antisocial behavior, end quote. Oh, God. Observing a bank of monitors in the town council's control center, the town officials used this technology to broadcast warnings to deviants in real time. Oh, my God. The crime-fighting strategy behind this, I guess, is the speaker cam, if you will, draws upon the humiliation of being rebuked in public. Oh, God. Yeah. What? We are the dead. You are the dead. What was that? It's over there. Behind the telescreen. We might as well give up now. You might as well give up now.
against the wall. Don't move. Put your hands behind your head. Lay down. Stand up. Don't move.
We are the dead. You are the dead.
Investigated, it doesn't make sense for us to let them know who they are.
And that one's Jewish, and that one's cool. Who let all this witchcraft into the room?
Okay, well, the White House has made it official. They have now officially recognized the legal status of gay couples and gay parents. And as it says here, this is from John Aravas's blog, I guess. I'm sorry, I didn't write it down right. Something rather historic happened this past week. The White House, for the first time ever on its website, recognized the legitimacy of gay couples as both married couples and as parents. It was done when the White House published a photo, and it's a lovely photo, of Vice President Dick Cheney's new grandson, the child of the Vice President's lesbian daughter and her lesbian spouse. The White House not only published a photo of the child with the vice president's wife, but the caption was even more telling. This is what it says. Vice President Dick Cheney and his wife Lynn Cheney welcomed their sixth grandchild, Samuel David Cheney, Wednesday, May 23, 2007. He weighed 8 pounds 6 ounces and was born at 9:46 a.m. at Sibley Hospital in Washington, D.C. His parents are the Cheney's daughter Mary and her partner Heather Poe. White House photo by David Borer. Did you catch that last sentence? Not the one about the White House photo, but the one about the parents. The White House officially recognized a lesbian couple as co-equal parents of a child. Hey, you right-wing pigs. Hey, you fake Christian fundamentalists. Aren't you wetting your pants? Not only is this a recognition of the legitimacy of gay parents. In other words, if one person is the birth mother and the other the mother's partner, both are the parents of the child, according to the White House. But the Bush crime family also is implicitly recognizing the legitimate couple status of two gay people in love. They're not just simply two gay people, they're parents, just like your parents, booby. So why does this photograph at the White House .gov, whatever the hell it is, why is this de facto recognition of gay marriage? Because either Mary or Heather or both are not the biological mom of this child. You know, with two women, only one can be the biological parent. Oh, my God. So for the White House to recognize both as parents means, are you following me, Truth Seeker? Okay. They are recognizing the legitimacy of the two women as one entity, the parent. So, it's a hell of a statement by the White House, right? Let alone one of the most right-wing in the history of this tattered, battered, sad nation. And one that prides itself on being so anti-gay. There it is. Look at Lynn Cheney. She looks like she just ate this baby's dead twin. She's got such a smile on her face.
Ooh, I ate it.
So now a question for Grandpa. Isn't it just a bit disingenuous to say that your daughter's family is private and off limits and to get so pissy with reporters for being out of line? And then you got this photo on the homepage of an official government website. Come on, dick. Sure, this evil, degenerate, sick old man loves his grandson. Why not? And loves his daughter. Why not? But given the fact of Cheney's role in an administration that denies his own grandson a legal relationship with his own mom, isn't it time, Dick, to explain this to somebody, to your perverted sense of God, to your base constituency, to somebody? Or is it just another go Cheney yourself, I'll do anything I like, while the rest of you stew in your own sweat? How dare these hypocritical pigs? How dare they? They do everything they can, everything that this corrupt, filthy administration can do to deny gay couples the right just to be left alone, just to have a legal union, call it marriage, I don't care what you call it, and to have children. Do you realize how many states make it illegal in this sad, battered, tattered republic for gay people to even adopt, with all the children that are begging for a mommy and a daddy? But apparently Jesus would be pissed off, Muhammad, or somebody would be so pissed off that the wrath of God would come singeing up or down from hell and burn everybody. But not if you're Dick Cheney and Mary Cheney and Heather Poe and Lynn Cheney. If you are these four, then, oh, look at that baby. Oh, coo-coo-coo. Don't get too close to Grandpa. He eats live human beings. And he blows up little babies in Iraq and Afghanistan. He'd like to blow them up in Iran. He'd like to blow up little babies no matter where they are. But look at Granddad's smile. That's a smile. No, that's not a sneer. That's a smile. And look at Mama Lynn, who loves writing lesbian eroticism. Oh, no! Yes, she does. Well, little grandson, obviously being raised by two women, you're just going to turn out to be a raving homosexual, right? I wonder what the Focus on the Family scum think about this. Anyway, it's a grand day in the Republic because the Bush crime family, through the good offices of this degenerate cyborg, Dick Cheney, has now sanctioned gay unions, gay parents. It's all there. There it is. Isn't it? Jen writes in, do you know how many people can use this as evidence in court cases? That's true. That's true. I wonder what Fat Tony Scalia or Sammy the Fish Alito or John Roberts. I wonder what these guys on the Supreme Court will do now if a case comes in front of them where a gay or lesbian parent has had his or her child taken away by some retrograde right-wing court in some backwater domestic relations court, probably here in the South, and the case works its way to the Supreme Court, and the gay or lesbian parent is saying, no, this is not fair, and the Supreme Court is saying, hum, are you queer? Are you a sodomite? Then what makes you think you have the right to raise your child?
Your Honors, look at this picture. Do you recognize this couple?
The court will entertain none of this nonsense. Get the sodomite out.
Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? Oh, by the way, Tom DeLay has a book out. And Jeffrey Goldberg of The New Yorker has interviewed DeLay. DeLay explains to Jeffrey how his adultery, DeLay's, was different from Gingrich's. And, of course, Gingrich explained how his was different from Clinton's. In The New Yorker, Jeffrey Goldberg, writes, in his new book, Tom DeLay criticizes Newt Gingrich for, among other things, conducting an affair with a Capitol Hill employee during the 1998 impeachment trial of Bill Clinton. DeLay said, yes, I don't think that Newt could set a high moral standard, a high moral tone during that moment. You can't do that if you're keeping secrets about your own adulterous affairs. He added that the impeachment trial was one of his proudest moments. The difference between his own adultery and Gingrich's, he said, is that I was no longer committing adultery by that time. By the time of the impeachment trial, that's a big difference. Also, I had returned to Christ and repented my sins by that time.
The outline where the boy first drops. Beware the Holy Trinity, church and state and law. For every death the virus gets more deadly than before. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these.
About 10 before the hour, Suzanne in L.A. writes, Mike, Andy Borowitz pointed out that Cheney now has more grandchildren than draft deferments. Yeah, Tom DeLay had returned to Christ and repented his sins by the time he was leading the charge against Bill Clinton. But, of course, as Tom DeLay points out, Newt Gingrich hadn't done that. They're like little twisted boys, aren't they? These sick little white boys. They sit around. Well, mine's bigger than yours. No, no, it's not. Yes, it is. You want to see? Oh, and by the way, God talks to Tom DeLay from the same article in The New Yorker. DeLay says that when in the coming years he is not fighting the indictment in Texas, you know, he's going to go to jail if his God does exist. If he's not fighting the indictment, he will be building a conservative grassroots equivalent of MoveOn.org. He says, God has spoken to me. I listen to God, and what I've heard is that I'm supposed to devote myself to rebuilding the conservative base, the Republican Party, and I think we shouldn't be underestimated. Hey, Tom. Psst. Look up. This is God, Tom. I have an assignment for you. Get a length of rope. Maybe 8 or 10 feet. Good, that's good. Now, you see that limb and that tree out there? Throw one end of the rope. Oh, that's it. Now tie it real tight. That's good. No, Tom. Remember Job. Remember Abraham. Trust me. Now, Tom, make a loop in the bottom of it. Good. Now, put your head in the loop. That's good, Tom. Now, just kind of lean back and close your eyes. Don't choke. Don't gag. Good, Tom. I can't even believe that people like Gingrich and DeLay are, from the same species as me. Or as I. I just can't believe it. And Laura Mallory and the Harry Potter books. What, the boss's husband is in the chat room? No kidding. Shelley's in the chat room? If you're a Founders Club, you want to get in there and talk to the boss's husband. I don't know, what that's worth. But if you want to go there, novamradio.com right now. Log on with your Founders Club username and your password. Do that at the chat link on the website, and you can talk to the boss's husband. I mean, why anyone would want to, I have no idea. He can't do anything. But Shelley's entertaining. What else have we got here? I got a couple more things that I really want to share with you.
I would think it would interest our listeners to know that Shelley Drobny is well known for his blogs on the Huffington Post.
That's right. Shelley is becoming a prolific writer as well as a repeat founder of liberal radio networks.
He just had to get it right this time.
Yeah, that's right. The Air America thing was he let too many thieves in the front door because they were throwing money at him. Not this time. Bush's approval ratings are at 28%, so it's time to trot out some phony Al-Qaeda actor. This guy, Adam Yehi Gadan, who also goes by the name of Azam al-Amriki. He's an American. An American member of Al-Qaeda. Sure he is. He warned President Bush yesterday to end U.S. involvement in all Muslim lands or face an attack worse than the September 11th suicide assault, according to a new videotape. Wearing a white robe and a turban, with his SAG card securely in his wallet, Adam Gadan, whatever, said Al-Qaeda would not negotiate on his demands. He said, "Your failure to heed our demands means that you and your people will experience things which will make you forget all about the horrors of September 11th, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Virginia Tech." That's what he said in a 7-minute video. Gadan, who has been charged in a U.S. treason indictment with aiding Al-Qaeda, spoke in English, and the video carried Arabic subtitles. Gadan, who also who appeared in an Al-Qaeda video last September in which he called on Americans to convert to Islam, demanded that Bush remove all U.S. military and spies from Islamic countries, free all Muslims, and end support for Israel. Gadan, a California native, is the first American to be charged with treason in more than 50 years and could face the death penalty if convicted. Isn't it amazing? Isn't it just incredibly amazing? All of a sudden, we have this guy. Huh? We have this guy. What do you want to bet? He's probably an unemployed actor from somewhere in the East Village in New York. He's been hanging out like, couldn't find my next gig. And all of a sudden I get approached by the CIA and they say, "Hey, yo, do you want to become an Al-Qaeda member?" And I'm like, "What, are you crazy? I'm not for Al-Qaeda. I'm Jewish." No, that's not the point. We don't mean really an Al-Qaeda member. We mean, look, you're an actor, right? Well, I want to be someday. Okay, you got a SAG card? Yeah. You remember AFTRA? Oh, yeah. Okay, well, here's what you do. We're going to get you this nice white robe. We're going to put Arabic subtitles underneath you. We have a bunch of people who can translate. Oops, no, they're gone because they're queer. Well, we'll still do it anyway. But listen, all you got to do is sit there and read the script. Are you willing to do it? Nobody will take this seriously, will they? No. Not going to take it seriously at all. Okay. That's how that works. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. In the latest law breaking by this thug Dick Cheney, whose impeachment, of course, is off the table, thanks to the sterling Democratic Party leadership that you and I helped give all this power to. The latest law breaking from Cheney is no more access to who visits Dick Cheney at his official residence. A lawyer for this pissant told the Secret Service to eliminate data on who visited his nibs at his official residence. That's according to a newly disclosed letter. The Justice Department filed the letter last Friday, in a lawsuit by a private group, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. You've heard of them. It's CREW. That organization is seeking the identities of conservative religious leaders who visit Cheney at his official residence. The newly disclosed letter about visitors to Cheney's residence is accompanied by an 18-page Secret Service document revealing the agency's longstanding practice has been to destroy printed daily access lists of visitors to the residence. Because of pending lawsuits, the Secret Service says it is now keeping copies of all material on visitors to Cheney's residence. CREW's chief counsel, Ann Wiseman, said, quote, the latest filings make clear that this administration has been destroying documents and entering into secret agreements in violation of the law. Yes, Anne, they have. The reason they're doing, see, this was done last September when reports started to surface about all of Jack Abramoff's visits to Cheney's office, this corrupt thug Abramoff who's now in prison. And Cat 9 writes in and says, Mike, I wonder what Cheney's new grandchild will think about or feel 14 years from now when he reads the history of his grandparents. Or will Cheney have this shredded too? Probably. From D, since Miss Cheney and her partner live in Virginia, Miss Heather Poe has no legal right to even adopt this child, and if the union was to end, would not even be allowed visitation. Uh-huh. What do you want to bet, though, Dee, that the grandson of the Vice President of the United States of America could have visitation from anybody who wanted to that was on the approved list? Even if there was, well, on the other hand, I can see Dick Cheney saying to Heather Poe at some point, you're a dyke, right? You want to visit my grandson. Get out of here before I have you killed. Stark in Sacramento says, Mike, I've heard that Tom DeLay's new book is available either in hardcover or in 36-roll packages with 325 sheets per roll. Shit-a-boom. Yeah, it took me a second to get that, too. And I love this. This is the Pew Charitable Trust Economic Mobility Project has put together. They did a survey. They did some research. And what it says is the part of the American dream that says a man's children will be better off than he was has become a dream, not reality, according to analysis of census data released today. Was it today? I guess it was today. A generation ago, American men in their 30s had median annual incomes of about $40,000, compared with men of the same age who now make about $35,000 a year adjusted for inflation. So it's gone down. That's a 12.5% drop between 1974 and 2004. To be sure, household incomes rose during the same period, but because there are more full-time working women. Of course, the men who run American companies didn't have too much to complain about. CEO pay increased to 262 times the average worker's pay in 2005. Back in 1978, it was 35 times the average worker's pay. But I like this. You know, they say they're talking about American men here. A generation ago, men in their 30s had median annual incomes of about $40,000 compared with men of the same age now who make about $35,000. What are they leaving off? What important word have they left out of this? Huh? Come on. Come on. What important word? Now listen, let me read it to you again. A generation ago, American men in their 30s had median annual incomes of about $40,000 compared with men of the same age now who make about $35,000 a year adjusted for inflation. What important... I'll give you a hint. It's an adjective. What important word is being left out of there? That's right. White. White American men a generation ago. I can't believe this. They go on and on and on and on about the pay gap and about how men are suffering and there's nothing to do and blah, blah. And they leave out the fact that we've had a generation of black men in this country who would have done anything for a decent job for 40 grand a year. Are you kidding me? This is how, I know I'm preaching to the choir. I know you people know this, but this is how racism is so subtly and deeply and critically embedded into everything that we do. Don't you? You know, when I say that if you're white in America, you're a racist by definition, a lot of people get their back up about that. I'm not a racist. And you don't understand what I'm talking about. I'm not saying you go out of your way to use the N-word, although you probably do. You know, I'm not saying that you know, you just hate black folk on sight, although you're probably scared of them. But what I'm saying is, it's there. It's in everything. Everything we do, it's there. Here it is in a respectable organization like the Pew Charitable Trust. How many times do we quote them on this program? How many times are they quoted by national media? This is a respectable organization. They do their work. But they're racist, by definition. Not chunky, nasty, evil, N-word racist. They're just racist by definition. That's all. Talking about men in their 30s a generation ago who had annual incomes of 40 grand. And they don't leave out the key, they leave out the key word, white. Oh, well. Oh, well. What else we got here? Sherry in Seattle wrote to me and said, well, the big boys did it, Mike. Between the Bushrove machine and right-wing media bullies, they managed to break the spirit of the grief-stricken mother with no previous public or political experience, Cindy Sheehan. Wow, aren't they the manly men? If it wasn't so sad, it would be comical. Sherry in Seattle. I keep coming back to this thing in the Times today. As the Bush administration completes secret new rules governing interrogations, a group of experts advising the intelligence agencies are arguing that the harsh techniques used since the 2001 terrorist attacks are outmoded, amateurish, and unreliable. The psychologists and other specialists commissioned by the Intelligence Science Board make the case that more than 5 years after the September 11th attacks, the Bush administration has yet to create an elite core of interrogators trained to glean secrets from terrorism suspects. My God. In a blistering lecture delivered last month, a former advisor to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice called immoral some interrogation tactics used by the CIA and the Pentagon. This story today was just scary. Scary. President Bush has insisted that those secret enhanced techniques are crucial. But some of the experts involved in the interrogation review called Educing Information say that during World War II, German and Japanese prisoners were effectively questioned without coercion.
Pickles Bush, when Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
That hurt. 21 past the hour. Torture. Torture, torture, torture. The director of the Science Board project, the Intelligence Science Board, yes, there is such a thing, Robert Fine, a forensic psychologist at Harvard, declined to speak on the record about all this. In a prologue, however, to the December report, the first of a planned series, Mr. Fine said the shortage of research meant that many American interrogators were, quote, forced to make it up on the fly, resulting in, quote, unfortunate cases of abuse. Aw, really? What we've been doing is, you see, our torturers, our American torturers, have been consulting their counterparts in Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and other countries to compile a catalog of techniques said to be effective against Arab and Muslim prisoners. Oh, my God. This is really happening. This is really happening. Andrew Sullivan, who is very upset about all this, he writes the Daily Dish at, is it Harper's.com or I guess it's the Atlantic.com. Do you know the term? I'm going to mispronounce it because I'm no good at German. Wehrschaft Wernemung. Wernemung. Wehrschaft Wernemung. That's German for enhanced interrogation. Other translations of that phrase include intensified interrogation or sharpened interrogation. It's a phrase that apparently was concocted in 1937 to describe the torture that would leave no marks and therefore save the embarrassment pre-war Nazi officials were experiencing as their wounded torture victims ended up in court. The methods are indistinguishable from those described as enhanced interrogation techniques by George Bush. Originally, the use of hypothermia was not allowed by the Nazis. It's been organized or authorized by Bush and Rumsfeld. Waterboarding was forbidden too. As time went on, however, historians found that all the bureaucratic restrictions in Nazi Germany were eventually broken or abridged, you know, once you start torturing, it has a life of its own. In Norway, this is from a report that Andrew Sullivan researched. In Norway, we actually have a 1948 court case that weighs whether enhanced interrogation using the methods approved by President Bush amount to torture. 60 years ago. The proceedings are fascinating with specific reference to the hypothermia used at Gitmo and throughout interrogation centers across the field of conflict. The Nazi defense of the technique is almost verbatim that of the Bush administration. Here, and you can't see it because this is radio, here's a document from Norway's 1948 war crimes trials detailing the prosecution of Nazis convicted of enhanced interrogation techniques in the Second World War. And they're exactly what John Yoo and Alberto Gonzalez and Dick Cheney told George Bush he could get away with. Between 1942 and 1945... this method of torture was used on 11 Norwegian citizens, of which we have the records. This method involved the use of various implements of torture, cold baths, blows and kicks to the face and all over the body. Most of the prisoners suffered for a considerable time from the injuries received during those interrogations. Freezing prisoners to near death, repeated beatings, long forced standing, waterboarding, cold showers in air-conditioned rooms, stress positions, arrest mit Wehrschärfung, withholding of medicine and leaving wounded or sick prisoners alone in cells for days on end. All these have occurred at U.S. detention camps under the command of George W. Bush. Over 100 documented deaths have occurred in these sessions. The Pentagon itself has conceded homicide by torture in multiple cases. Most of the victims, by the way, were not in uniform. And the Nazis tried to argue, just as John Yoo did, that this made torturing them legitimate. But going back to the Norwegian cases, the victims were paramilitary Norwegians operating as an insurgency against an occupying force, and the torturers had also interrogated some prisoners humanely. But the argument deployed by Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, and the Nazis before them doesn't make sense to the quote, or to the court. Oh, God. The John Yoo position is what's called sensible torture. Do you believe we're talking about this, or I'm talking about it? Stick around, because I got to finish this, and then we'll do something weird.
Hypocrites and liars.
The quality of mercy is not good.
Senators and lawyers.
The quality of mercy is not good. The quality of mercy is not
murderers and martyrs. The quality of mercy is not surrender.
Radio for a rational world. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
Yeah, reality radio for a rational world.
That's us.
The camp slogan at Camp Nama in Iraq was "No blood, no foul." In other words, don't break the skin, you can do anything. Take the issue of stress positions, so-called, that were photographed at Abu Ghraib and used at Bagram in Afghanistan to murder detainees. Here's a good description of how a stress position works. The hands were tied closely together with a cord at the back of the prisoner. Then the body was raised using the tied hands as a fulcrum and hung to a hook from the ceiling. The hook was attached 2 meters off the ground so that the feet hung in the air. The whole body weight rested thus at the joints of the shoulders and the back and the neck, all bent to the rear. The minimum period of hanging was half an hour. To remain there 3 hours, hung that way, was happened fairly often. This punishment was carried out twice weekly. Now, this is from eyewitness reports that people have been there. Dreadful pain in the shoulders and wrists were the results of this treatment. The lungs worked feverishly to supply the body with necessary oxygen. The heart raced. Sweat dripped from all the pores. This, by the way, what I just read to you, is an account not just of what went on at Camp Nama in Iraq, but also what people went through during the enhanced interrogation techniques at Dachau, the Nazi death camp, one of the Nazi death camps. Now, if you want to feel that there's a comparison here between Bush and Hitler, have at it. Andrew Sullivan writes, "What I'm reporting is a simple empirical fact. The interrogation methods approved and defended by this president are not new. The very phrase used by Bush to describe torture that isn't somehow torture is a term originally coined by the Nazis, enhanced interrogation techniques. The two are indistinguishable. The methods were clearly understood in 1948 as war crimes, and the punishment meted out by the various war crimes trials across Europe, including Nuremberg, the punishment for this was death." My senior correspondent who sent me the story writes, "And as Cindy Sheehan said, America sits and wonders and bites their fingernails and wets their pants about who will be America's next idol. Outside of Michael Moore, no one in this blank-blank country is organizing trips to Guantanamo. Even Michael Moore isn't organizing some kind of mass trip to Guantanamo to take the place over and free the innocent and tortured who reside there. No one cares about them. No one cares about those that we have no knowledge of. No one wants to do a blank-blank thing. And meanwhile, innocent people sit in our concentration camps going insane, committing suicide, fearing that the next thing that they will have to go through will be worse than the last thing they had to go through, and praying, hoping and praying that the next time, the next torture, will be their last. And they hope that they actually die so that it finally stops." And my senior correspondent closes that note to me with a rather strong epithet. We don't think about this, do we? See, we don't dare think about this. These are the kinds of techniques that Rush Limbaugh called frat house hazing, the kind described by Nazi death camp prisoners, and the kinds of torture used by the United States against people who are scooped up And not charged with anything except being an enemy combatant because they don't have on a uniform and nobody knows where they're from or what they're doing. They're cab drivers, sheep herders, opium growers, people on their way to what remains of markets in Afghanistan. You know, just common folk, people in Iraq who happen to, I don't know, be in the wrong place at the wrong time. They're all swept up. This is what we do now, Truth Seeker. This is what we do now. And Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid say that impeachment is off the table. We're not going to impeach them. We can't get the two-thirds votes to convict. Okay. Okay. "Dear Mike, I'm a 28-year-old husband and father of three with our fourth on the way, and I've been a soldier in the U.S. Army since 2000. I joined because I couldn't find stable employment in my chosen career as a music educator and needed a way to support my wife and son at the time. I remember when I enlisted back then, we would hear speeches from many of our officers about the unwritten agreement members of the military made with their government when they chose to join an all-volunteer military. We as soldiers pledged to go to war and give our lives to defend the democracy we loved and believed in, and we did so because our elected members of our government fully understood the gravity of such a commitment and would only use military force as a last resort. Back then, the business of war and the profit it generates for those at the top of the political food chain was still something you had to go looking for in order to find it. And I was still naive to our long-standing and brutal foreign policy that flew in the face of this idea. Since we invaded Iraq, we no longer hear these types of speeches from our leaders because it has become blatantly obvious to all that this unwritten agreement has been irrevocably breached. We are now 4 years into this insane conflict, and I have been there to see the madness with my own eyes. I have met other husbands and fathers who did not have the luxury, as I do, of a job that was away from the front lines, and they returned to their families forever changed. What is even more frightening is that now we are trapped in some Orwellian nightmare, and I am more and more convinced that a day will soon come when our president will be ordering us into our own hometowns. I would never follow such an order. However, I am terrified that many of my fellow soldiers would blindly go anywhere they were told to go. Despite the regulations that prevent me from being outspoken, I can no longer remain silent. I have started a blog and will attempt to speak from a soldier's perspective on the state of things and the direction I see it heading. While I know that my identity could easily be revealed if the right people decided to look, I am willing to take the risk because I cannot stay silent any longer. Mike, I'm a longtime listener and enormous fan of your show and your view on things. Blah, blah, blah. My blog link is blogoftheunknownsoldier.blogspot.com. Go check it out. blogoftheunknownsoldier.blogspot.com. Thanks for reading, Mike. Signed, The Unknown Soldier. blogoftheunknownsoldier.blogspot.com. Check it out. Check it out. blogoftheunknownsoldier.blogspot.com. In a Wall Street Journal op-ed published the other day, one of the biggest mouths in the neoconservative, neo-Nazi movement in this country, Norman Podoretz, writes that he hopes and prays, his words, hopes and prays that Bush will bomb Iran. This guy sits on the Council of Foreign Relations. He's the editor-at-large of Commentary. He writes for the Wall Street Journal, quote, although many persist in denying it, I continue to believe that what September 11, 2001 did was to plunge us headlong into nothing less than another world war. I call this new war World War IV, because I also believe that what is generally known as the Cold War was actually World War III. Podoretz believes that, quote, the plain and brutal truth is that if Iran is to be prevented from developing a nuclear arsenal, there is no alternative to the actual use of military force, any more than there was an alternative to force if Hitler was to be stopped in 1938. He goes on to say, since a ground invasion of Iran must be ruled out for many different reasons, the job would have to be done, if it is to be done at all, by a campaign of airstrikes. Furthermore, because Iran's nuclear facilities are dispersed and because some of them are underground, many sorties and bunker-busting munitions would be required. And because such a campaign is beyond the capabilities of Israel and the will, let alone the courage, of any of our allies, it could be carried out only by the United States. My God.
cannot let terrorists and rogue nations hold this nation hostile or hold our allies hostile.
Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion to.
It's about 9 before the hour. I mispronounce Podhoretz's name. It's Podhoretz. Podhoretz. Accent on the second syllable. Podhoretz. Thanks, Reg. Now, if Reg would just translate that German phrase for me. Check out The Unknown Soldier, will you? Blog of theunknownsoldier.blogspot.com. You know, he was kind enough to write, and I think we ought to... I went there earlier today. Go take a look. Dick Gephardt, the former Democratic House Majority Leader, has been hired by Peabody Energy, which is one of the nation's leading producers of coal, to help make the case for liquefied coal. What Gephardt will be doing is pushing his former colleagues in the United States House and the United States Senate to put on the backs of taxpayers billions of dollars in guarantees for construction loans for what is referred to as coal-to-liquid production plants. Dick Gephardt will also be lobbying like a madman to guarantee minimum prices for the new fuel and guarantee big government purchases for the next 25 years. Coal, whether it's solid or liquid, of course, is one of the major reasons the planet is choking to death. But apparently, Dick Gephardt doesn't care. Oh my God. A research team from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, led by Howard Herzog, who is the co-author of The Future of Coal, says this whole idea goes against the whole grain of reducing carbon. The MIT team expressed even more skepticism about the economic risks. It estimated that it would cost $70 billion to build enough plants to replace 10% of American gasoline consumption. Oh, my God. So what happens to former Democratic speakers of the House? Or, I'm sorry, House Majority Leaders? They become whores! For the coal industry, no disrespect to the sex workers out there. Oh, Gephardt, you filthy bastard. You filthy bastard. He's also going to be lobbying for the idea that once the coal to liquefied fuel is actually happens by the year maybe 2030... that the U.S. Department of Defense will insist that the Air Force sign a 25-year purchase contract to use this stuff as we continue to pound and beat and liquefy the rest of humanity. Apparently, Dick Gephardt has been hired by Peabody Energy, one of the nation's largest producers of coal and pollution, one of the companies that has almost single-handedly destroyed West Virginia. Oh, I understand. If you're a coal miner in West Virginia, it's pretty difficult to weigh the environmental destruction caused by lopping off the top third of a mountain to get at the coal up against whether or not you can feed your children. I understand that. And, of course, the coal mine companies, the companies that own the mines and own the workers and own their children and own their lungs and own their livers and own their wives, continue to provide for the coal miners, one of the most dangerous environments any worker can go into. Dick Gephardt, the former Democratic House Majority Leader, has been hired by Peabody Energy to make the case for liquefied coal. Thanks, Dick. This is in yesterday's Times. This is a guy that wanted to be president, right? Environmental groups are adamantly opposed to all of this, warning that coal-based diesel fuel would at best do little to slow global warming, and at worst would produce almost twice as much of the greenhouse gases tied to global warming as petroleum. So Dick Gephardt has been hired to lobby for Peabody Energy, one of the nation's largest producers of coal, to convince the American taxpayer to once again pay for the rope with which we'll use to hang ourselves. This is incredible. And you know what? It will happen. Dick Gephardt will get to work. Representative Rick Boucher, a Virginia Democrat whose district is dominated by coal mining, is writing key sections of the House energy bill that will contain this. In the Senate, champions of coal to liquid fuels include Barack Obama of Illinois, Jim Bunning of Kentucky, and Larry Craig of Wyoming. Barack Obama wants to be president. He's a Democrat. Jim Bunning and Larry Craig are Republicans. Barack Obama and Richard Gephardt, together at last. The hour. Now, regarding the coal liquefaction scheme, our good friend over at headonradio.com, Bob Kincaid, sent me this email. And again, if you haven't been to Head On Radio, as in Head On Collision, headonradio.com, you should go there and you should listen and you should do whatever it takes to let those folks know that you're tuning in occasionally. Here's what Bob writes, and he lives there. He lives in West Virginia. He says, Mike, putting things into perspective, by the end of the decade, let me stop for a second. Have your pencils ready, truth seekers, because he sent me a couple of websites where you can see pictures of what it looks like in West Virginia. So have your pens ready. Mike, putting things into perspective, by the end of the decade, an area of the Appalachians equal in size to the entire state of Delaware will have been turned into moonscape by the likes of Peabody and Massey Energy. As it stands, a turkey buzzard flying across one of these sites has to pack a lunch. At present, most of the coal goes to fuel the insatiable energy jones of the American Southeast, including West Virginia. It's really a sort of cannibalism. Even now, poor old West Virginia gets the equivalent of one Hiroshima bomb used on it every 9 days. If this madcap scheme passes, it would be like living in a war zone here. You can see the effects at the following websites. OHVEC.org, which is O-H-V-E-C, O-H-V-E-C.org. You can go to CRMW.net or ILoveMountains.org. Let me give them to you again. OHVEC, O-H-V-E-C.org, CRMW.net, and ILoveMountains.org. The photos, Bob writes, will, I promise, chill you. The last site, ILoveMountains.org, has videos that will leave you shaken and sad. These are the oldest mountains on the entire planet. And by the way, my congressman, Nick Rahal, Democrat, is chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee. He just introduced a rule to keep wind energy projects from getting off the ground. What else do we call this but a particularly nasty syphilitic form of prostitution? Bob. Democrats. Well, folks in West Virginia got to make a living, right? They also have to breathe. They also have to have clean drinking water. Oh, come on, Malloy. Anyway, here are the websites again. Thanks to Bob Kincaid. OHVEC.org, O-H-V-E-C.org, CRMW.net, ILoveMountains.org. Check it out. Oh, and by the way, just there's no point in our talking about Robert Zoellick, the new head of the World Bank, who is taking the place of Paul Wolfowitz. Paul Zoellick is, if you go to Project for New American Century, he is one of the original members of PNAC. He is one of the signatories to a letter sent to Clinton in 1998 suggesting that Clinton invade Iraq. And, of course, Clinton said no. So from one PNAC member to another, it really doesn't matter anymore. It really doesn't matter anymore. But anyway, Zoellick is the executive, I think the CEO of Goldman Sachs. He was a former U.S. Deputy Secretary of State. He was a former U.S. Trade Representative. He was a fellow with the German Marshall Fund of the U.S. It's a think tank. He was chief executive designate for the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He was a professor of national security, U.S. Naval Academy. He was executive vice president of Fannie Mae. He was a deputy chief of staff to President George Herbert Walker Bush. He was an undersecretary of state. He was U.S. Treasury Department, a role. He had a role there. He was a chief executive to the board of Fannie Mae. And what's left off of this BBC News profile on Robert Zoellick? The fact that he was a signatory and a founding member of the Project for a New American Century that advocated preemptive war against anyone who gets in our way. So from one murderous cannibal to another, just like that. From Paul Wolfowitz to Robert Zoellick. Never stops, does it, Truth Seekers, huh? Let's do some phone calls. You want to do that? Okay, let's start with Jackie, who's calling in from Tampa, Florida. Jackie, welcome to the program. Thanks for holding on.
Hey, Mike. I'm having so much fun in your chat room. I forgot I was holding on the phone.
Well, bless your heart. Are you talking to the boss's husband?
I'm sorry, say again?
Did you have a chance to talk to the boss's husband, Shelley?
No, apparently they just logged off before I got in there, but there's a lot of other luminaries in there.
Oh, great.
Celebrities from the Mike Malloy world.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Let's see. Who would Noam Chomsky is in there?
Almost is good. You've got Billy Foster, Ian's in there, Ben Burch is in there.
The Ben Burch?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, what you really called about, though?
Well, actually, I was listening last night, and you were talking a lot about that feeling of frustration and not really knowing what to do.
Yeah.
You know, that feeling of kind of being plastered to the seat and sort of stunned.
Yes.
And I think about that all the time because, you know, I feel like I'm in the same mode. And I was thinking, I'm of the age where Vietnam was, I was still a child, and I really wasn't totally aware of all of it.
Right.
But I'm kind of thinking that maybe some of the protest tactics and things that were used back then maybe won't be so effective now, because back then the press and the media were actually paying attention to protesters to some extent, at least it seems from my memory.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm thinking maybe nowadays we need to completely take a totally different approach. Like, you know, think outside the box. You know, my inclination is to hack their computers, you know, something that off the wall. But, you know, maybe it's a high-tech or maybe even a low-tech approach we need to be looking at this point.
You know, I think those of us who are getting so frustrated, Jack, are probably open to any suggestion. But you got to keep in mind that all the pieces are in place and the camps have been built, that if they do, let's supposing you and I decided to do something like that, it would be very easy to track us down unless we decided to head for the hills fully armed.
Mm-hmm.
Americans will wind up in these detention camps. We have to figure out something to do. You know, I believe one of the best ways to resist would be to resist, where millions of American citizens on a given day just stop.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, just totally stop. There's no law on any books that say you have to keep going. There's no law that says stopping is against the law.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine, if you will, just for a moment, I mean, there's 300 million of us scrabbling around inside this country. That's what the estimate is. Imagine if 40 or 50 million people just stopped. And by stopped, I mean literally stopped. Just
yeah.
I don't know, woke up in the morning and stayed home and I don't know, read a book, watched television, dug a hole, or at some prearranged time, everybody just stopped what they're doing and just walk out to their car, their bus, their SUV, their Hummer, whatever the hell they drive, and get in it and go home.
And we hold so much power with the consumer dollar. You know?
Oh, my God.
Why are we giving these people our money?
The bus strike, the Montgomery bus strike, it's been done so many times where when people finally realize they've had enough and just stop. That's all. Just stop.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't require action. All it requires is no action.
Right.
And that's the part about it that is so appealing to me. You don't have to sign anything. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to, you know, get in the line for tear gas or high powered water hose or rubber bullets. You just stop.
Mm-hmm. And how can you be arrested or in trouble for doing something because you didn't actually do anything?
You can't. You can't. That's
right.
The point. So, well, I'm open to all ideas, Jackie. I don't know. Maybe the time will come when 10 or 20 or 30 million or 50 or 100 million Americans, and I hope you and I are among that group, just stop.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Jackie. I appreciate you checking in.
Bye-bye.
gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It's about 23 past the hour. Oh, and by the way, Norman Podhoretz was also a founding member and signatory to the Project for a New American Century mission statement and letter to Clinton and designer of the attack and occupation of Iraq and the attack upcoming at some point, an occupation or something of Iran. So Robert Zoellick, the new president of the World Bank, Norman Podhoretz, who still pines and bleeds for blood and gore and destruction in Iran. Small world, huh? Just go to their website and take a look at the signatories. Take a look at these people and then realize what they're doing and what they have been doing. Oh. All right, back to your phone calls. Curtis is calling from Osaka, Japan, and you've been holding on for over an hour, Curtis?
Yeah, Mike, no problem. I love talking to you. I haven't had a chance in a while. A couple of things, I'll be real brief. Canary in the coal mine kind of a thing. If people want to know what they can do when they get that stuck-to-the-seat frustration kind of feeling, I think the main thing that we need to do is support progressive talk radio. A year and a half or so ago when Christian Wright bought out that station in Phoenix and turned into Christian crazy stuff, you put out the call, and I thought, heck, that's a good place to put a couple of bucks. So I scraped up $100, and I helped get KPHX back on the air from all the way over here in Japan. I had no real vested interest in it, but I thought, what a, it can't possibly be a better use for my limited amount of funds. I submit to you that if they hadn't done away with the fairness doctrine and if right-wing radio had never existed, that we would not be in the dire straits that we are in today. So I think people need to step up, get off the sofa, and join the Founders Club. Please be aware I have no relationship to NoVam Radio in any way, shape, or form. But there is no more effective way to take $100 and ensure that people are heard in the future. And that gives us our canary in the coal mine, Mike, because if progressive radio is taken down by some of these crazy edicts that Bush has put out recently, then it's time for Plan B. And that's the second part of my thing is, folks, you better have a Plan B. And the first part of it better be to get your hands on a passport, update your current passport. I understand it's very difficult, time-consuming to get a passport in the States now. Make sure you have one. I hope you've got one, Mike. I invited you years ago to come to my place over here, and that invitation stands. Although I tell you, it might be a bit crowded because Randy's coming over, too. She said she'd be glad to babysit Molly. So, people, please understand that you better have a Plan B in place because it's going to be too doggone late when the lights go out. Mike and I are going to be real busy, though, when that happens. And, Mike, one other quick question for you. Why do you stay in Georgia? I've tried to figure that out. What's keeping you there, my man?
A lot of people have asked me that. You know, I came to Atlanta in 1970, which was a lifetime ago, and left for about a year and a half, but came back because I liked it. Atlanta proper, Georgia sucks, and to a large extent, it's getting worse and worse. But it's become home. I've been here for 37 years, and but I'll tell you what, Curtis, if that invitation still holds, you never know about who's going to show up on your doorstep. Curtis, thank you so much for calling and for the things you said about progressive radio. I appreciate it. You take care, all right?
You bet, Mike. Good talking to you.
All right, sir. My pleasure.
Someone stole the key card.
It's time.
Someone stole the key card. Someone stole the key card.
Time to get up and dance. You ready? Okay, let's go. Let's go.
Who stole the key card? Who stole the key card from the butcher shop?
Hey!
Round and firm and fully packed. It was hanging from the rack. Someone stole the key card while I turned my back.
Hey!
Who stole the key card? Who stole the key card? Who stole the key card from the butcher shop?
Whoa.
Or my sweet Kielbasi. You can have my girl D. Bring me back my keys.
Hey!
Who stole the keys? Who stole the keys? Who stole the keys? From the butcher shop. Yaka found the keys. Yaka found the keys. Yaka found the keys. He hung it on the rack.
Hey!
He found the keys. He found the keys. He found the keys. Hung it on the rack.
Hey! Boy, on that last spin around, I just flung Kathy right out the door here. Kath! Guillermo in Miami earlier tonight had requested that. Whoa. Well, that certainly felt good, didn't it? Huh? Anytime you get too down, just get a polka going and do the kishka, dance to the kishka. Interesting what Curtis in Osaka was talking about the passports. It was last week. I went to the vital records section here in Atlanta to get Molly's birth certificate, and Kathy went out today to get hers, and my passport has expired, but apparently, according to the rules and regs, that is ample proof of your citizenship and your birth, since they've gone through it once. So we are heading for the post office, when, this Friday? This Friday, Kathy and Molly and Mike, to take care of that little thing. I would love to go to Osaka, wouldn't you? I mean, all the pictures I have seen of Japan. Is that Honshu Island, Osaka? I wonder if they do the kishka there. All right, back to phone calls. Where are we? We're down here. Jack is calling from Salt Lake City, Utah. Jack, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Jack.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine, sir.
Yeah, I was calling originally about your Pew Research report you read. And
First
I was kind of baffled on the racism part, but then I started thinking about it. And, I'm a white male, 33 years old,
mm-hmm.
from Utah, or I live in Utah. And, the white male is kind of like the canary in the coal mine. I mean, it's kind of good in a way, because I think until, white America starts losing these jobs, then they really don't see the importance of labor, or they don't see the importance of changing anything as long as they have a job. And,
yeah.
But it is completely racist. But I'll tell you, I make less than my dad does. And, my dad used to have a really good job at a factory in Michigan.
Right.
And now he washes dishes at a country restaurant outside of Michigan. We spent this weekend going to the cemetery and visiting my mom and looking at the old Oldsmobile plant they're tearing down, and traveling around to all the places he grew up, and just seeing like just how much America has changed. And I'm a truck driver, and so I go to 48 states, and so I talk to a lot of people, And I'm doing a trucking documentary right now, and it's going to be the biggest labor movie ever made. And people overlook truck drivers. They drive right by them, mm-hmm. and they don't realize I'm going to the source of everything. You know, truckers bring the, you know, transportation is the key to everything in this country. And you don't see it unless you're a truck driver. Everything we have is shipped in. You know, I go to Atlanta a lot, and I love Atlanta. And I think the South gets a bad rap. There's a lot of good people in the South. And, you know, but I'm doing this movie. It's called Brotherhood of the CDL. And, you know, basically we're doing covering everything from Jimmy Hoffa to today. And right now I'm going to 50 states in 45 days campaigning for truckers' rights. And we've already been through Phoenix, and we've been through 14 states so far. And so far I've sent out all these press releases to all these, you know, the major newspapers, magazines, everybody in Phoenix. I didn't get you guys down, but in Phoenix. But, like, I mean, nobody really cares. I mean, like, maybe Lindsay Lohan's a canary in the coal mine. I mean, maybe she, I mean, seriously, like, because that's all they seem to talk about is the whole world's going to heck, but all they care about is whether, you know, what she did this week, you know.
I know. Jack, tell us a little bit more about your documentary. What is it?
Sure. It's called Brotherhood of the CDL. And
now, what does that stand for?
Stands for Commercial Driver's License.
CDL. Okay. I'm sorry. And, that's gross ignorance on my part. Brotherhood of the CDL. Okay.
Yeah, and basically, you know, this is going to sound really crazy, but I started driving in 99, and then after 2002, I was taking a load up to Idaho, and I was listening to the NPR, and I heard George Bush's speech where he gave the State of the Union, and it was like, it blew my mind because he said everything that the Democrats were saying, but, you know, like about how he's going to change the country and unite everybody.
Right.
And, it sparked something inside of me, and I'm like, I got to do something about truck drivers because they keep America rolling. And he hijacked the guy who said, you know, let's stop this hijacking. He hijacked George Bush, took those words and made it his own.
Right.
And that got me thinking, you know, like, what if I did a documentary about truck driving? Maybe I could change America, you know?
How far into it are you so far, Jack?
I'm almost finished. As soon as I get out, we're ending the documentary in Lansing, Michigan, because if you don't know, that's where the cars come from, and that's where a lot of our problem we're in right now started in Michigan. I mean,
I'm
automotive.
Yeah, Jack, I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, and I lived in Flint for 8 months. When General Motors was still a powerhouse employer. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing your movie. Will you keep
there's a trailer up on YouTube too. It's that Brotherhood of the CDL, and then the keyword is Shaw Films. And
what's the keyword?
The keyword is Shaw Films. And
spell it for me.
Sure. It's Brotherhood of the CDL, and then you type in Shaw Films, S-H-A-W-F-I-L-M-S.
And, Shaw Films, that's all one word.
All one word, and you can get to my actual website for my movie, which is brotherhoodofthecdl.com. And but I'm going to be, it's also got a schedule of all the cities that I'm going through. And if you really want to do something like like people are talking about tonight, support the truck driver. Support the guy that brings you your bread. He brings you your butter. I mean.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, in a different dimension, it feels like now. There was a time in my life, and I've said this on the air before, where my primary goal was to be an over the road trucker. I there was something about the romance of it and the freedom of it that. You know, back in the day, I used to think, man, that is the job. Now, it's brotherhoodofthecdl.com.
Yeah, and when you type that in, it's all one word, of course. But
yeah.
In order to, I'm like an independent guy. Like, I was really, I campaigned for, you know, I fought against the first war, and I marched in Ann Arbor, Michigan. That's where I grew up.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, but, like, after I got to college and I got a job and, like, people that were in the Democratic Party turned their backs and wouldn't help me. I realized that, you know, like there's bad seeds on both sides, and I feel that I'm I'm better off just being independent, you know. And
sure.
Like, and I think, and I try to believe in America. Like, I'm a total like I got a tattoo to my arm, the American dream, you know, American dreamer.
I hear
but,
you.
But you know, and I didn't want to miss you. I turned off my air conditioning. I turned off my truck so I wasn't idling it so I could hear you. And I pulled over at a rest area. And one of the biggest problems for truck drivers, we have no place to sleep at night. That's why you see us lined up and down the freeway. We don't want to sleep on the freeway. I could not find a place to park, and I stopped early tonight, and I could not find a place. So I'm sitting on the side of the freeway with trucks whizzing by me right now just to make this call. I sat on hold for over an hour and a half because, you know, it's so important to me that something gets done. And transportation affects everything. I mean, everything. I mean, talk about consumption of fuel. I burn over 300 gallons of fuel every 2 days.
Jack, I can't wait to see your film. And do me a favor,
sure.
stay in touch with us. We've got a boogie, but it was real good to hear from you tonight. I'm so glad you called.
Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. Stay in touch, Jack, please.
Okay.
All right,
bye.
Man. Take care. Before the hour, wow, go to his website, brotherhoodofthecdl.com. Oh, man, look at the photographs from the road. There's about 60 of them in here. There's a whole slideshow. There's a movie trailer. Man, oh, man, oh, man. It took a while to log on because I think a lot of people are trying to get onto this site, brotherhoodofthecdl.com. Good luck, Jack. Man, I wish you the best with this film. Wow. What a sight. Man, he's not kidding. He's not kidding. Thanks, Jack. That's great. Brotherhoodofthecdl.com. Credits. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program at KPHX in Phoenix, our flagship station. He also answered your calls. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. New name added to the list of credits. Nova M Radio's chat room moderator. Thanks to Billy Foster. I didn't get a chance to get there tonight, but we'll try. I'm not very good at parallel processing at all, as Kathy will tell you. It's difficult for me to walk and chew gum at the same time. Thanks to Mark Marshall, our webmaster, the moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board. And if you get a chance, check in at NovaMRadio.com and sign up. Become a founding member, as our friend from Osaka, Japan, suggested. We could use your support that way. The executive producer of this program is Catherine Bay, who is doing fine tonight until we dance to the Kishka. You okay? You are all right? Okay, good. She has a sweater draped around her shoulders over here. You look like it's been a rough night, Kathy. But thanks for producing the program. Barbara is calling from Seattle. Barbara, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, absolutely. I think I got your email. You emailed me earlier this evening about what you want to talk about, right?
No, I sent you one yesterday about the...
Oh, was it yesterday?
The about Iraqis that were training are killing us?
No, about the monthly services.
Oh,
at,
yeah.
At Fort Lewis.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I you know, I read that, and I just... Go ahead. I didn't mean to step on your phone call.
Oh, that's okay. Well, I wanted to toss in one thing first before I got to that, which was, you notice how the new World Bank president looks a lot like Bolton, another cadaver.
Yeah, don't they? They all look like they live on human blood, and they don't get enough to put a little poundage on.
Don't
I know what you
ever.
Mean. Yeah.
But anyway, for Fort Lewis, that's here in the South Puget Sound area, and there's about 11,000 Fort Lewis soldiers over there.
Right.
The two striker brigades. One of the striker brigades was, in one of the latest Bush fiascos, moved from Mosul to the Baghdad area, and we've lost 19 out of the Fort Lewis brigades in the last month, just this month alone.
Oh, my God.
And if you don't mind, I'll read you what's going on here.
Sure.
Which is, says, so many Fort Lewis soldiers are being killed in Iraq, the Army post will no longer hold individual memorial services.
Yeah.
Starting next month, Fort Lewis says it will hold one memorial a month for all the dead soldiers.
Oh, Jesus.
The Fort Lewis acting commander, Brigade General William Troy, told staff last week that the number of soldiers in harm's way will preclude individual services.
Oh, my God.
And that says so much, I just, you know, it's hard to take.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to take.
Yeah.
No individual services.
Nope. So even that's being turned into a mass market type of thing. From what I understand, there are four other bases in the country that are facing the same thing and that are doing the same thing, which is, like I say, just unbelievably sad.
Yeah, I'm glad you phoned in with this because on at MikeMalloy.com, when you go to that site, we usually have on the main page upcoming shows and then today's date, which I believe was Wednesday the 30th, yeah.
Yeah.
But Kathy mentions, she wrote it today. We kind of take turns. She writes most of them, sometimes I do. But she has this, just to bring it all home, so many soldiers from Fort Lewis, Washington are dying. The Army base there is now holding monthly mass memorial services. 16 soldiers from this base were killed in Iraq just this month. Too many to schedule individual services for the families.
Yeah, it's now up to 19.
And 19 now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Check, I sent the other article to Malloy Producer, the AOL address.
Yeah, that's
Kathy. Yeah, check the one. I think the subject line was something like, people were training in Iraq are now killing us. And it recounts the disillusionment of the soldiers.
Yeah.
And the fact they no longer believe they took out a group of what looked like civilians that were setting a roadside bomb. And when they went to, you know, inspect them, they found identification on them for the Iraqi military that they had just trained.
Yeah, I read that someplace recently, and it's just shocking on the one hand. On the other hand, why not?
Why not? Yep.
I mean, we're there to train people, and the Iraqi people who have suffered so much for the past 12 years, all they want to see are our asses leaving their country.
Yes.
That's all they want to see. Barbara, we got to leave it there. Thank you so much for checking
in. Okay. Hey, thank you, Mike.
All right. Take care. Take care. I'm going to be in Seattle. When am I going to be in Seattle? 14th? 15th? Huh? 14th of July. Our affiliate there is planning something. We haven't announced it yet, I don't think. But I'll be there, Barbara, so I hope, along with some other people who do progressive talk. Thanks for participating tonight, everybody. I appreciate it. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.